there's so much promise here, but it's sometimes tempered by, oh, but the system is what it is and has been for 100 years, and that's difficult to change, especially when maybe it's not politically expedient to do so. But I really think we're fighting the good fight in Kentucky, and I feel a lot of promise when we talk about these sort of things.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to today's episode of Learning Unboxed. As always, I'm excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. And joining us today is Rob Collins, who is the innovative program consultant with the Kentucky Department of Education, where he manages something called the Kentucky Innovative Learning Network. So, Rob, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Annalise, hi. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So let's just set a little bit of context for our listeners as we get started. The Kentucky Innovative Learning Network is a professional network of innovative leaders leading in a space of collaboration across the Commonwealth, engaging in innovative professional learning and annual presentations of learning to build capacity and momentum for deeper learning across the Commonwealth, or Kentucky, as they like to call it, and diverse stakeholder groups, right? I think we have two Commonwealths in the United States. So it's always fun when you bump up against that. So, right. You know, Rob, let's sort of start with a sort of 100,000 foot view. So first and foremost, because you're also with the Department of Education, essentially, why did the state or the Commonwealth feel like this was needed? Let's start with that.
Yeah, so I think just 1,000-foot view, the Innovative Learning Network, we call it the ILN, has existed since about, I think, 2013, 14 is really when it had its genesis, and that was before I was with the department. But we were seeing this, you know, movement toward personalized, competency-based learning that wasn't that industrial model, right? The assembly line model. Mm-hmm. And I think our leaders at the department, specifically my division director, David Cook, saw a need to convene leaders that really wanted to challenge our current system of education. And then, of course, we got films like Most Likely to Succeed sort of, you know, burgeoning in that space as well. And really, it was just born of a desire to do things differently, specifically with students in mind.
And yeah, I can see, you know, so many different places having and starting to have these conversations, recognizing that what we've been doing, that old factory model, it's what we know, but it's not what we need, right? And so it's really interesting to me to be able to have these conversations across numerous states and other parts of the world as well, in terms of how are you tackling this known problem? It, you know, it's not like this is a mystery. We know it's an issue, but solving for what to do with it inside of systems and multiple systems. In the U.S., we've got the federal system, and then we've got all the state systems, and then you've got local systems within systems. It becomes really complicated. So with that in mind, and then the state establishes this, so let's talk a little bit about the specifics of what does this network do?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So the nitty-gritty of the network, we're around 40 or so districts out of, I believe, 172 in Kentucky. So 40 of our kind of most forward-thinking progressive districts have come together. And what the ILN does, it offers a space for innovative professional learning. So we bring in really highly regarded national partners to help be thought partners and offer professional learning. I believe you're familiar with Education Reimagined is one of our really close partners. And they're lovely, right? So. Yeah. So we find partners similar to Education Reimagined and other groups that, one, tackle that professional learning aspect, really talking about leadership capacity in that transformative space. Another thing that we've really built into the system, though, is collaboration with cross-district collaboration. So really looking at problems of practice and bringing leaders together to discuss what are you doing in your space? What are the challenges? What are the successes? And each year, we actually just started last year, so this will be our second year, but we do an exhibition of innovation and learning to bring together all that work happening across these 40 districts and really giving it sort of a public platform. So that's the nitty-gritty of the network, but I'd be remiss to not mention that it's all animated by Kentucky's United We Learn vision, which I don't know if you're familiar with that vision at all, but I can give the
share
quick...
Share that with us, because I think it gives great context. Yeah,
certainly. Yeah. So I'll give the spark notes. Essentially, the United We Learn vision was sort of brought forth by our previous commissioner, Dr. Jason Glass, through listening tours and empathy interviews with diverse groups of Kentucky stakeholders. So teachers, students, community members, family members. And essentially, we listened. What do you want for the future of education? What do you want your children to get out of education? And from these regional listening tours, from these extensive empathy interviews, we surfaced three big ideas. The first of which is vibrant learning experiences for every student. The second is accelerating innovation, but particularly in the area of assessment. And the third one is collaboration with communities, engaging communities so that they are a living part of the learning process. And those three big ideas really live atop the Innovative Learning Network. And we kind of guide all of our work in those three buckets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And I think those are three wonderful big ideas that sort of came from that. And I really appreciate, as an anthropologist, let me just also say, I appreciate the approach that you used a listening tour, right, to get this data. So good on Kentucky for that. But I want to dig in a little bit to these three big ideas. So, you know, as you sort of these bubbled up, this idea of vibrant learning experiences for every student, you know, we talk about that all the time. You know, anybody that is within sort of the bigger, broader global ecosystem tied to this type of transformative work, everybody would agree with this. So I'm really curious, you know, several years out since, you know, those conversations, those listening tours, what does that look like today? Vibrant learning experiences for every student. So give us some tangible examples of this concept in action.
Yeah, certainly. So I guess in the broader context, we're really looking at reshaping educational pedagogy and tools to be more personalized and authentic to students. So we've been looking at personalized competency-based systems and partnering with groups that kind of live in that space. Probably our biggest statewide partnership has been with PBL Works, formerly the Buck Institute. And Kentucky had a huge partnership that's actually still ongoing with PBL Works to train one-third of Kentucky teachers in gold standard project-based learning. So really shifting that goalpost for a huge number of our teachers in what does it mean to really tackle deep inquiry questions and allow students to guide their learning and sort of discover on their own. And we've had districts partner with PBL Works as well, and they've trained their entire staff in project-based learning. Mm-hmm. So if I had to pick one sort of hinge point partnership, that would be the one. Though we have tons of initiatives going on in other spaces that are tackling more, let's say, CTE-based problems and innovations. And yeah, so it's really just shifting the needle on thinking the way that we're teaching and the way we've structured our systems, how might we credential learning in different ways? Is also another piece, and how might we shift our pedagogy to really incorporate students in a more active way?
Right, right. And I would assume then that tied to that element of stepping people through inquiry and then to project-based and ultimately perhaps, you know, even shifting to the next phase, which is problem-based, right? But ultimately, none of that, no matter where you are in those different sort of scaffolds, right, of applied teaching and learning, this question around assessment's always going to come up. And, you know, it sounds also like some of the work is shifting into a more student autonomy or student agency driven model, and hopefully mastery is coming with that, plus, you know, a whole number of other elements. But I'm curious, because that was one of the things that, you know, you mentioned that came from the listening tour. How now is the state thinking about innovations in those competencies or assessment moving forward? Are we talking about making shifts from, you know, standard driven and letting go of traditional course structure? How innovative, I guess, are we really willing to go here? That's what I'm trying to ask.
Yeah, no, certainly. I'm excited. I'm grinning ear to talk about it. So we have a variety of initiatives that live within our division of innovative learning. And the one that's really tackling what a system or systems of assessment and accountability mm-hmm. looks like, we call our L3s, or our local laboratories of learning. And these are inclusive coalitions of districts and their partners and stakeholders that are rethinking that question of how do we credential learning and what is accountability to us in a way that's meaningful. So we have 18 districts that have built, typically it starts with portrait of a learner work mm-hmm. and then digging into portrait of a learner work. And I believe we had two districts that actually just released local accountability dashboards that share their local priorities that have been built with their community. And one of our districts actually released that in tandem with state test scores. Mm-hmm. And the signaling of that was, I think, masterful in that, yes, these standardized test scores exist and they are part of the equation, but we also have this larger, broader picture of what our students are accomplishing and the joy that they feel in school and what we do as a service to our community. So that's one way. And I think it's probably mm-hmm. our most impactful way of really shifting the system and the paradigm. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy to talk more about that if you'd like, or there are other things I can address as well.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I'm really curious, you know, where the state is going with this idea, right? Because, you know, I've talked to so many departments of education in a variety of different places, and it's intriguing to me, right? And everybody's journey is different. Everybody's journey is what it is. Right. You know, you start, you have to meet folks where they are. And, you know, there are elements of all the journeys that are really hard and elements of all the journeys that are, you know, pretty seamless. Right. And sometimes we're surprised both directions in terms of what proved to be hard and what was like, oh, no, this is no big deal. Let's just move forward. And you're like, what? I was expecting you to really clamor about that. And everything obviously in between. And so I'm really curious about sort of the idea of, you know, state credentialing with industry, and this idea of really sort of standards driven, as opposed to, you know, we all go to Algebra 2, right? And the standard of pass for state graduation, I'm just making something up here, right? Is, you know, Algebra 2 is one of the courses. And yet we know that teaching Algebra 2 for the sake of teaching Algebra 2 does not help kids. And it certainly doesn't help our communities down the road when these kids leave K-12 and actually, you know, are working with amongst us. So mm-hmm. how is the state thinking about bigger, broader, longer term? And you may not have the answer to this right now, but, and how does that conversation sort of interwoven into the work that we're talking about?
Sure. So I think out of the L3 work, we also have, based on that United We Learn vision, the state has convened a Kentucky United We Learn Council, which is really mm-hmm. asking that larger, broader question of how do, one, the legislature and the state government, how are we shifting the space? And part of mm-hmm. what that group has settled on, and again, it's a really inclusive group of, you know, students, teachers, policymakers, et cetera, is building a system of systems, which is kind of our colloquialism for it, but mm-hmm. essentially looking at these local spaces and seeing, okay, what are they trying, what's working, and how might we integrate this into that larger, kind of more concrete system of assessment. And part of that is including our legislature in the mm-hmm. discussion. So we have key stakeholders in that space that are part of this council and hearing from our local groups. And it's really exploratory at the moment. I think it really is allowing mm-hmm. these districts the space to say, here's what we want to try and here's what we're going to value because our community values it, and seeing in what ways is that feasible. And of course, you know, the challenges there of moving mm-hmm. an entire state or commonwealth to a really radical system. But something I've found that's been really affirming is folks recognize that the old system of schooling just really doesn't do it for our kids. It doesn't ignite their passions. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really extend their thoughts and their critical thinking. And when we talk about, you know, performance-based assessment and project-based learning and competency-based learning, folks really get behind the idea. So I think there's recognition that there's so much promise here, but it's sometimes tempered by, oh, but the system is what it is and has been for 100 years, and that's difficult to change, especially when maybe it's not politically expedient to do so. But I really think we're fighting the good fight in Kentucky, and I feel a lot of promise when we talk about these sort of things.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I will echo what you said, right? Policy's hard. We know that for a long-term systemic change, right? Oftentimes policy has to come hand in hand with the innovations. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes that doesn't. Sometimes innovation gets ahead of policy. Sometimes policy gets in the way or even ahead of the innovations, right? And that's just the nature of the beast. So I think it's really important that we acknowledge, yes, all of that is real. And it's not good, bad. It's something in between. It is what it is. Systems work is really tough work. But I applaud the state for really taking it on. I'm curious about one of the other elements that are sort of woven through this work, if you could share a little bit. And that is about the Kentucky Innovative Teacher Fellowship element that is part of this. How does that interplay?
Oh my gosh. So that's full disclosure, that's my baby.
Well, then hey, let's go there.
Can't wait to talk about it. Yeah. So how can I talk about the genesis of the ITF, is what we call it. Essentially, I remember interviewing for this position to take over the Innovative Learning Network. Mm-hmm. And much of our work is focused on, you know, executive level leaders. So superintendents, chief academic officers. And there was a real space for teachers because, of course, they're such an integral part of the system, right? I would argue most integral, right behind students. So we saw this space of we're doing really innovative things with leaders and talking about systems work and systems change. What we're not doing, though, is bringing teachers into this collaborative space in the same way. So we started an innovative teacher fellowship, and it's really structured around those three big ideas as well. So, sorry, I think my mic is... Sorry about that. Anyway, it's structured around bringing teachers in to work on personalized learning, competency-based projects in their classrooms that hit, one, a vibrant experience for every student, two, that innovation and assessment, and three, they must collaborate and engage their communities in some way. So yeah, essentially we put out feelers and had an application and had the most incredible group of, we chose 11 for the first cohort. We've chosen 10 for the second that are just in their spaces, really rethinking, okay, what can we do to have a truly transformative experience in our classroom and our practice? Yeah. And they're doing it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't think I give you enough detail there, but.
Well, no, I've got questions and I'm going to ask them. That's how we're going to dig out the detail. No worries there. So, okay, that's awesome. We do a very similar process as well. And I think we've also seen some pretty amazing results. But also one of the things that we know from our work in that space is that you have these 10 or 11 incredible professionals. And even though you put them into a network and you cohort them, the reality is sometimes these folks are still working on islands, right? And that can be really difficult as an innovative educator to feel like you are an island. So outside of the cohort itself, because I assume, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that these teachers are sort of spread across the state. They're not all in the same district, correct?
The furthest away they are, I think, 6 hours between them. So yes, they are north, south, east, and west.
So how do you support that individual island when they're feeling island-like, right? Outside, you know, see what I'm saying? Because that is one of the big pieces, and it's one of the really large expenses, let's just be perfectly frank, around education transformation is the ongoing day-to-day support that's often needed and necessary to truly have systemic systems change. Mm-hmm. So you're doing it on a much smaller scale, which is always the right way to pilot a new thing, right? So mm-hmm. yay there. But how do you support that individual innovator? What are some strategies you're using for that?
Yeah, it's the challenge of being an early adopter, right? And really kind of digging into the new thing. What we found, though, especially with that first cohort, and I bring them up as kind of the more demonstrative example because we've been through the full cohort with them. Mm-hmm. But building that community in a space where you can recognize, oh, there are people that really want to try things that are different. And even if it's crazy, and even if it's hours upon hours of work, there's something sustaining about knowing, oh, I found my people. Even if they are 6 hours away, right. We still convene virtually and in person 2-3 times a year, actually. So there's something life bringing about that work. And I really think just the human-centered element of recognizing teachers and the experience of being a teacher right now, especially, and really digging into that, we're your community here, and we're here to support you in the ways you need, and that flexibility. I think a lot of times teachers don't feel they have flexibility to try new things, and they feel a certain pressure, often due to antiquated systems of testing and things like that. But coming from my space, saying, look, you're part of the Kentucky Department of Education right now, and we are giving you the flexibility. If you have something you want to try, my answer is try it, and let's see what comes of it. And I think there was something really sustaining for them in that. And, you know, you talk about starting small scale. We had such success with that first cohort, and the second cohort is doing wonderfully as well, that Kentucky has 8 regional cooperatives, and they actually started their own teacher fellowships as well. So just the spread of that and finding that coalition of the willing, I think, has been incredible. So where we started at 11, now we're, you know, numbering almost near 100 teachers trying this work.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's really fabulous. We always, the idea of the coalition of the willing, right? So I always refer to those as the 3 rings of Dante, right? So we have our teachers who are always going to be our hell yesers, right?
Yeah.
We give them a thing. It's because they're constantly innovating, right? And these are the people that you're talking about. Those folks are natural to lead the transformative work because it's their day-to-day life. They don't have to stretch to do the thing because that's their natural inclination, right? And then sort of that next tier is our what the hells, right? Those are the people that are always kind of in the middle on the fence. It's not that they're unwilling. It's they're just not sure, right? They are going to toe in. They need their hell yesers to sort of see that they can be successful. And I'd like to do that too. And then, you know, we have our hell no's. And we just know that, you know, you're never going to really kind of get them to move. But the reality of it is that systems change, you know, has to deal with all of those elements. And it's really important to be able to recognize that. So I appreciate that the state, you know, understood the power of that coalition of the willing and to be able to tap into those folks to lead that work. And I love the fact that those cooperatives are scaling that for you, right? That's the beauty, honestly, of knowing that what you're doing is working and it's being successful. If all of those other places are like, we're going to do that too, you know, good on you in that sense. So can you give us a real life example of an innovative program or project that one of these fellows, right, designed or developed or put in place? Because I'm sure you're intimately involved with it and you know all of them, but there's got to be one or two that you're like, oh, wow, I love that.
Yeah, you're so masterful at this. I was chomping at the bit to say, I have examples. So thank you. Yes, I can. So shout out to one of my pals. He's amazing. His name's Brian Quillen. He works in the Jefferson County Public School District, our largest school district. It's around 100,000 students. It's in Louisville. But he was an English teacher at the time. He's since moved on to cybersecurity. But his project was based around, they were reading dystopian literature. And they looked at issues in their community and essentially created PSAs on taking issues in the community to their like dystopic finale almost. And they created projects where essentially they partnered with community organizations to learn about that issue and how it affected Louisville and created their own dystopias to sort of warn against that cautionary tale of, well, here's what could happen if we don't fix this. And here's how we can, you know, broach fixing this issue. And that was just such a rich way, first off, to start with literature in like 1984, right?
Yeah.
And then get to true community action. And their work was beautiful. And Brian, of course, is an amazing teacher. So shout out to him. I hope he listens to this. But anyway. Yeah. And then, so we had two other teachers in Western Kentucky in Marshall County, and they worked together. It was two teachers in the same building. One was a math teacher. The other was ELA social studies. And essentially one classroom designed a outdoor classroom for their school. Mm-hmm. And they brought in engineers from the local university, and they designed this ideal outdoor space and, you know, budgeted for it. And the other classroom was a math classroom, and they essentially budgeted to put on a community event to raise money for that outdoor classroom. So those two projects worked together, one with the really rich math content connection and the changing your school connection. And I don't know, I just think that was so amazing the way they worked together to do something demonstrable for their school, right? Mm-hmm. So that's another call out. Of course, there's eight others I could mention, but those two were really rich for sure.
And, you know, I love the commonality of the two of them is that they have a really deep service learning component to them, right? Mm. And we know that this generation of learners, we're talking about that is really important to them, right?
Yeah.
So that's the other thing, right? Tapping into the things that are naturally and natively important to the people that we are teaching, the folks who are, in fact, our learners, that's the heart of a learner-centered ecosystem, is recognizing, you know, what gets our kids jazzed, right? We complain about the kids not showing up, right? Well, they're not showing up because they're bored. It's not because they don't want to be there. They literally can't figure out what it has to do with them. Mm-hmm. So if we shift the narrative and understand what's important to them, then suddenly you're going to have buy-in. And that's why I love service learning based sort of approaches, is because it taps into that native thing that the kiddos have. I really love those two examples, you know, for that. I always, Rob, like to recognize that, you know, our listeners come to us from all over the world with mm-hmm. different scenarios and different systems all in play. But that, you know, they've heard our conversation and there are nuggets of the things we've talked about that are going to be really intriguing to them. But this idea of a network that is tasked with taking on the burden of innovation or innovative practices and doing the testing and the piloting, that's a really critical thing, and it can be incredibly powerful, but it can also be daunting if you feel like you are an island, to go back to that analogy that we wove through this earlier. So how would you recommend somebody who is listening to our conversation that wants to get started with being more deliberate about the way they think about educational transformation via innovation? What would you say to somebody just trying to launch?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Okay. I think what I've found in managing this network is being really deliberate about the way I structure the experiences and being really clear in my communication to our network members of, you know, here are the dates we're doing this thing and here are kind of the expectations, and just giving that frame is really helpful. So the organizational work is imperative. Mm-hmm. But then once these folks get together, being willing to kind of follow the trail of conversation as it comes up and the problems of practice. So it really is a balancing act, especially when you're doing a large network. Like I said, 40 districts, that's a lot of folks to manage, right? But offering that space and ensuring that, one, it has value, whether it be from outside partners, but also the place to be, the place where you can air your grievances and issues, right? And find new ground. So yeah, I think my suggestion would be really build up a frame that brings people together and kind of calms any fears they may have about what this experience is, but then also inviting that sort of freeform growth once you actually get together. Some of our greatest work has come from seeing a problem that a district has brought to us, districts connecting on, oh yeah, we have that same issue. And then from there exploring, okay, well, how might we address that issue? And how might we as the state agency help? So that would be my suggestion, I think. And of course, reach out to me too if you want to talk. I'm always happy to chat about this sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. We really appreciate that. And I would encourage folks, if you have questions, to absolutely reach out to Rob for help with that. Rob, I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your day to chat with us and to share the work of the Kentucky Innovative Learning Network and the lessons learned and all the great aspirations for the work moving forward. It's really remarkable. And so congratulations on that. And thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, Annalise, this has been a pleasure. First podcast in the books. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.